Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast, hosted by me, Boyd Hilton. I'm joined by two glorious colleagues, Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
Who's always here, week after week after week,
always
helping me trawl through the week's pop culture, film, entertainment, music, but
mostly
pretty much
TV.
Always television. But our other partner in crime, Steph Zinn, is away this week, isn't she?
Yeah.
Steph. And
Gran Canaria.
Gran Canaria. Instead of Skyping live into the podcast from Gran Canaria, she's idling her life away by the pool, presumably sunning
she's
herself, whatever the F she's doing.
She's not. We've had reports. She's texted us and said she's actually just lying in a double bed watching Netflix.
Oh, yeah, that's of course.
I mean, of course she is, binging. It's
pretty what she does every day of her life anyway.
Yeah.
But instead, we have the voice of the man who runs this whole bloody podcast, John.
Hello.
John the hero. John
silent
the guru.
John,
not so silent John.
Yeah, sorry.
Johnny. John of the other podcast. What's your other podcast called again?
Dream Factory.
Dream
thanks.
Factory.
Got a very,
very funny.
Oh, and got a really good write-up. Actually, a better write-up than we did. Was it The Guardian?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh my God, yeah.
It was a sparkling review.
With a picture of you and everything.
Mm. Yeah.
Although, like, in that bleached out effect, so you can't quite see who you are, really. Unless
he
you
likes
know
to keep
you
an element of mystique about him.
Yes, that's what it is.
Total mystique. This week, the three of us will be in-depth reviewing, in the second half meaty bit of the podcast, the new epic period drama, The White Princess, which is on the Drama Channel.
Which I
things
didn't know was a channel.
Well, yeah, they would love that. It is.
Did it's you? Part of, I mean, you obviously
of course
do.
I did. It's part of the UK TV family. So you know channels like Dave? You're aware of that channel?
Yes.
Yes.
Got that.
And Gold?
Absolutely.
Yeah. They've got one called Drama. It's been going for ages. But this is one of the rare times they're showing a first run exclusive drama because which no other channel's showing in advance yet. So it's that's
well,
quite,
bravo.
It's a big moment for them. And it's a sequel to The White Queen, which did go out on the BBC. We'll get into all of that later. We're also doing, spoiler alert, what I consider to be one of the greatest programmes of all time, Would I Lie to You? And I'll be interested to see whether you two agree with me. New series of that starts next Monday on the BBC One.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, and Kay's already making faces, as she does when she has issues with one of my choices of programmes to review. This is an interesting... Is it a film? It's a film.
It's a film.
Netflix film. And it's going out on Netflix this Friday, the 17th, arriving, dropping, whatever you like to say, but it's also going to be shown in Curzon Cinemas, John.
Ah.
Yeah, to qualify it for all the awards. So this is pretty safe to say, like we've had Okja, which we reviewed on the show.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah. The Mayor at Stories, which I mentioned, which we didn't review, but which is there now with Dustin Hoffman and all those people. And but this, I believe, is their most Oscar-worthy film this year, I would say. And they're really hoping, they're really giving it a push for the Oscars. So let's see what we think.
When
of
does it
that
land?
Friday, this Friday.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm coining a new phrase. I think it should be plonk.
A plonk, a Netflix plonk.
Yeah.
I like it, yeah.
Okay, let's
Netflix
make that
happen. Are plonking it on their service this Friday. I'm sure they'll love that.
So if you're binging, is it having a plonk?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it is exactly that.
Multi-plonk.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm not sure that's going to catch on.
Be proud to plonk.
Okay.
Binge plonk.
Yeah.
Plonk binge. But before any of that, what we like to do in the first segment of the podcast is to listen to, look at what we've been interested in this week in our lives, in our actual proper lives.
Mm-hmm.
I may well start with you, Kay.
Okay.
As I like to do in this section.
Right. So as you know, I'm usually late to the party with most things. So I have been trawling through Curb Your Enthusiasm, be going through it. And
John's looking quizzical already.
I'm not sure you can describe it as curb crawling.
No.
There was an episode which is all about, have you seen that one where he picks up the prostitute in the car share episode?
Yes, when he's going to the baseball game.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I've been like catching up on it. I'm on series 5 and I think I might have watched the greatest episode ever, which is called The Christ Nail, and is basically where Larry decides to buy his housekeeper a bra, of course, and he then survives a vengeful attack from her husband, who's called Jesus, with a special nail. Yep. I mean, I'm not doing it justice, but you've seen it, right?
Of course.
Do you agree it's one of the greatest episodes?
Do you know what?
Obviously,
I hate to disagree with you, but it wouldn't be in my top 5. I mean, it might be in my... I'm thinking, it might be in my top 10, but not
right,
be in
I'll
my
take
top
10,
five.
Yeah, okay.
Just saying.
right.
But well, it's great. It's, of course, it's a great episode. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Aren't you happy that I'm catching up?
I'm thrilled. This is good. This goes back to, I think I've explained this on the podcast before, but we often coin the West Wing comparison where Kay started watching the West Wing about 3 years after it finished. But we did talk about that because, of course, you, John, don't watch any TV generally.
Yeah, it's a very
and
job.
Snub all the classics, but you feel you should watch them eventually. Is that right? Is that fair?
Yeah, I'm just worried about there's all the stuff that you've got to watch now.
Yeah.
So then I don't know when I'm going to catch up on the old stuff because I'm trying to keep up to date with all the good stuff that's happening right now.
Oh, yeah.
Limit your streaming services and your options. That's what I do.
Limit the plonking.
Yeah.
You have none.
Yeah, exactly. Get rid. Don't get Netflix.
That's a real limit.
Just right now.
Self-limiter.
Yeah.
So Curb, anything else?
Yes. Okay, right. So I am, you know how I went on and on about Tin Star because I obviously, you know, loved it and I broke my rule of the binge rule or the plonk rule now. Well, I've totally binged on Motherland, and I'm absolutely...
that programme called Mother and the Child. Motherland, yeah. Which we reviewed, did we last week or the week before?
Week before. And I'm obsessed with it. I went back, watched the pilot.
Yeah.
I've watched 5 episodes because they're all on iPlayer at the moment.
They're all on iPlayer. Oh, the whole series is on iPlayer. We should make that clear. Yeah. BBC's doing that in newfangled plonk style.
Yeah, and it's absolutely fantastic. So it's about Julia, played by Anna Maxwell-Martin, this really put-upon mother who's just trying to survive. And it's really, really great. Episode 4 is fantastic, where she's forced to go to a swimming pool party that she just doesn't want to go to. And I have to say, episode 5, because it's a completely funny series, like one of the funniest series I've seen in a long time. But did you find this, episode 5, there's just some emotional depth to the characters.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because obviously I did go to the launch of it. And they were all there talking about it. There was a discussion afterwards. And Sharon Horgan made it clear that they wanted to try and deepen the characters. They wanted to kind of show their darker side or their... Or just explain why they have issues in the issues they have. So, yeah.
I think they definitely did that in episode 5. And there's like this, the balance of power between them and the friendship groups.
Fascinating.
Out of kilter in that episode. Mm. And it's really, really good.
Yeah,
so
great.
I urge
the Paul
you to
episode
watch it.
Is the great... Was it episode 3, maybe?
No, it's 4.
4?
Yeah.
Where they all, John, you know, they have these pool parties. I didn't even know they happened. So apparently this is a thing that happens, right?
Yeah,
did you know about them?
Yeah.
So kids have a party in a pool.
Yeah.
In a civic centre, and all the bloody poor parents have to go in their swimming costumes and look after the kids. And there's like a rota, you have to have like 2 parents for every kid in the pool. It's madness. And imagine, again, I talked to Sharon Horgan, she was like, you know, the stress of having to wear a swimming costume in front of all these mums, you know. And oh my God, what absolute nightmare.
There's myriad problems.
It brings home the nightmare of that situation.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Honestly, Pogs, people on the ground listening, you have to watch this. Please like and tweet us and let us know what you think. And then the final thing I just want to talk to you about is we touched upon it last week. Poirot.
Oh, right. Okay. Is it the return of the creased waistcoat? That could be one of his new adventures. I might suggest that as a novel. Yeah,
should be.
Poirot and the Curse of the Creased Waistcoat.
Played by David Suchet. So last week we were talking about it, and I was, as a Poirot purist, was a bit agitated about Kenneth Branagh's depiction of Poirot. And I've had groundswell of support.
A groundswell?
Yes. From the Pogs.
Well.
Namely, at Torres J47 said he's Team Suchet.
One.
And another Pog called Claire got in touch to say she agreed. She'd only seen a few snippets.
People.
Yeah, 2 people.
Is that groundswell?
That's a swell.
John, is that groundswell?
Yeah, two's a party.
Two's a party. It's a party.
It's a Poirot party.
You can form your Poirot party if you want.
Exactly.
Your anti, so your furious anti
crease
waistcoat.
I've got the moral high ground now. Yeah. And just to say, anyone out there who hasn't seen the film but you are into Poirot like me, I've just found out that on BBC Radio 4 Extra, they have got an adaptation of Murder on the Orient Express with John Moffat. Do you know him?
John the Moffat.
Yeah, John, not the Moffat. John Moffat. John the Moffat.
I didn't say John the Moffat. I said John Moffat, questioningly.
Yeah, well, he's the actor playing.
So wait a minute. You're completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Well, it does because
you're contradicting yourself.
No, because I'm saying anyone interested in Agatha Christie and Poirot, I didn't say I've endorsed it because I haven't listened to it. I was letting the Pogs know that it exists.
Furious rage at Ken Branagh and his
priest waistcoat. Yeah, because I can't see the waistcoat.
Yeah, listen to this out-hoop person no one ever heard of.
With your ears.
Doing Murder on the Orient Express, which you could go to see in the cinema and watch 2 hours of it in the cinema. Anyway, it's always been a big hit, so I think, you know.
Well, all 5, I think it's 5 episodes, 30 minutes each on BBC iPlayer. Radio 4 Extra, if you want to listen to it and you don't want to see Kenneth Branagh's waistcoat.
the horrific sight, John, of his waistcoat. Is that
and
it?
And his dodgy tash.
Anything else you want to...
What, the list of stuff wrong
throw
with?
Throw in... Porous. No. Throw into the...
No, I'm done. I've got some shout-outs to do, but I'm going to wait till...
Okay, to the shout-out section.
Yeah.
I was listening to an interview of Kenneth Branagh, and they were talking about... He was talking about how in the book... He's described as having a famously over-the-top moustache.
Yes, I heard that.
So does Suchet not... Suchet's wouldn't cut the moustache. It wouldn't be famous enough.
Exactly. John, you've made a very good point. Branagh's moustache more accurate to the books than Suchet's. Yes or no, okay? It's a yes or no answer.
Perhaps. However, in every other way, he's not faithful to the original. Anyway, let's not get into this again.
Also, in that very same interview, which I also heard, didn't they address the point briefly of his fastidiousness? And Branagh did say how they're all very pleased with themselves for having made the whole thing so fastidious. Well, it's so funny.
Kenny needs to get in touch with me.
I think maybe there was a crease in the screen when we saw it at the Albert Hall. Imagine that. Maybe there was a crease in the screen. They often get a crease in the screen. The screen could have been like... the Albert Hall doesn't often show films, so they probably wheeled out the old screen and someone's put a crease in it, and you think it's a crease in it. I'm going to launch an investigation.
You're trivializing my point. You know it's not just the waistcoat. It's everything else.
Well, I mean, that was the...
The eating, the talking, the walking. Anyway.
The eating. Oh, yeah, the sharing of the cake.
Yeah. Anyway, John, what have
John, what have you been enjoying in the world of popular culture this week?
Well, seeing as I knew I would be on here talking about pop culture of the last few weeks, I thought I would check out the big Sky Atlantic show, Babylon Berlin. Have you guys heard about this?
Yeah.
German language. It costs 38 million euros, this series. It's like one of the biggest budget things that they've done. It's for the Sky Channel in Germany, I believe. Yeah. But obviously they've put it on Sky Atlantic here. So I watched the first episode. It's kind of about the I think it's the 1920s in Germany. So it's before the rise of Hitler and everything. And it is you follow an inspector who is called, I'm going to get this wrong.
Say it with your German accent, John.
Gerion Raff.
Gerion Raff.
And he's from Cologne, and he moves to Berlin, and so it's kind of the interesting thing is, as a foreigner to the country of production, there's a couple of things that are lost on you. So this idea of a fish out of water, a guy from Cologne in Berlin, doesn't really sit with someone in England, per se. And also there are a few scenes, I believe, in hindsight, that were in Russian, but obviously I don't know. I'm just watching subtitles.
You can't tell the difference between Russian and German. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Which is
surely the Russians they talk like that, or what?
The
Germans.
Prince Albert
no, impression. this is Prince Albert. This is Prince. The Germans that talk like that, and then the Russians are all like that, aren't they?
Very similar, Boydo.
Maybe they've got actual Russians and actual Germans in this. This is the thing, and that I'm basing my knowledge on fake, terrible acting of Russian.
Or
and
did
German.
You have it on mute and we're just reading subtitles?
Boyd's only ever watched TV shows where people do accents. Yeah. He's never seen one in the actual language.
No, never. Isn't this also about porn, the series?
There's a lot, there's a fair bit of nudity and it is about
pornography. I like how John skirted around that in the original.
But I just wanted to address that because I looked at the description of it. We did preview it in the magazine, but I didn't get a chance to watch it yet. And it looked like a kind of German period version of The Deuce, the current porno-based, which we reviewed a few ages ago, showing on Sky Atlantic with James Franco.
Oh, is there a detective element in that?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, there are cops in it. There are loads of cops in it, actually. So, yeah, I take that back. There is a detective element in it, kind of, a bit.
Deutsche Juice.
But yes, I'm very I'm very intrigued to see how the series continues.
Is it very adult?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
would you watch it with your mum?
Absolutely not.
Cool. That's the benchmark.
And then you'd accidentally find yourself watching it with your mum, and then your mum tries to be a cool. Oh yeah, no, it's just human bodies. Don't worry about it. And you want to die. You know that feeling.
God, yeah.
I've also been listening to a podcast.
Oh.
As the podcast man. Oh, go on.
No, I love it when you give us recommendations, because last time you told us Dirty John and it was a fantastic recommendation.
So this show is called Heavyweight, and it's produced by an American podcasting company called Gimlet that was set up by a man who used to work for This American Life at NPR, so good credentials. Mm. And this show is hosted by a man called Jonathan Goldstein, who's a reporter and writer in America. And the premise of it is about people trying to go back and rewrite a wrong that's happened in their life at some point. So I'm trying to think of one example.
Fun wrongs or serious ones?
It's a mixture. But it's
so like when someone says that a portrayal of Poirot is a disaster because of a creased waistcoat, and they want to realise it was a crease in the screen, they want to go back and write that wrong.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Deep breathing meditation.
So the first episode is actually specifically about his dad and his uncle who haven't spoken in a very long time, and it's about him trying to get them back together to talk to each other. Just grumpiness. But it's really funny because it's just two grumpy old men who are just like, oh, he doesn't want to see me, and then he has to pretend that they want to see each other just so that they... It's very funny.
Oh, that sounds good.
The thing I think of is it's in its tone, it's like on a level with kind of John Ronson or Louis Theroux, but it's much... He meddles a lot more. It's a lot more about him getting involved and trying to make things happen. And I think it's for my money, it's probably one of the best podcasts being made at this moment in
time.
What's
it called again?
Heavyweight. And it had a series last year, and they've just started the second series. So by this time this goes out, I believe there will be two or three episodes up of the second season. But you should listen to it all, particularly the second ever episode of the podcast that I cannot like tell you too much about, because I think if you go in blind, it's brilliant, because some of the revelations are amazing. So episode two, it's called Gregor.
Wow. I'm on to it.
The Poirot episode.
They could do an investigation into our Boyd and I multiple falling outs.
Funnily, have you finished your summary of things
yes.
you've been? Because I've got a John Ronson podcast to mention, which is The Butterfly Effect, which came out ages ago on Audible as an audio book this summer, but it's just arrived this week or last week on actual podcast on iTunes as a free podcast, all of it. And it's John Ronson, as you said, the one of the foremost investigators of what's going on in our time, looking at the porn industry. This is why I mentioned the porn industry. I'm not obsessed with porn, honestly.
So much porn in this podcast.
It is a porn theme, yeah. But it's all about how one German tech guy called Fabian changed the world of pornography globally and made tens of millions and millions and millions of dollars at the same time. He invented the kind of porn version of YouTube called Pornhub, where, YouTube, everyone downloads legally or illegally. And until recently, there was loads of copyrighted clips of stuff and actual full-length films and programs. People would just... illegally steal stuff, and YouTube was full of it. And YouTube spends most of their time, like my gout, kind of weeding that stuff out, making sure that what's there is
fine. What a boring job that must be.
Yeah. So the porn version, it was the same. Basically, all these people, he created this thing they already existed in a smaller scale, where you'd go and you'd take porn DVDs and you'd rip them to the site, basically, and you download them to the site, and it was all free. So suddenly you didn't have to go to your local... In America, porn is a massive industry. Your local porn DVD shop... and spend $20 on the latest porn, because it'd be a week later it'd end up being on this website. So what this German guy did is we got a massive loan. He bought up all of the sites that did this pretty much around in America, opened an office in Montreal, got some staff to make sure that they'd sort out any legalities, and then he ended up buying the production companies, most of them, that made the porn that was then being stolen to put on the website. So he's a porn baron, but he never has anything to do with the actual making of the porn, really. He has other people. I mean, he owns some of the companies that do. So now pretty much 80-90% of the world's porn viewing is controlled and owned by him, by this guy and his various myriad companies. But it's not just about that. The series is also about what you might call the butterfly effect, the idea of the butterfly flapping its wings and all this tiny little motion having massive ripples and effects going outward. It's all about what effect this has had on the people in the porn industry, porn stars, in the specialisation of pornography, and then beyond porn into all kinds of other areas as well, wider areas of society. And it's absolutely fascinating.
How many episodes is this?
I think it's five or six.
Yeah. There's a lot of porn.
Have you listened to it?
Yes.
Yes. I can see John sitting there going, oh, I listened to this
when it came out on Audible, I listened to it all.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, and the interesting thing I think about it is there have been, obviously, Louis Theroux's done a couple of documentaries about the porn industry, and... I think the thing that's really interesting about this one is, obviously, you've got this figure over the top of it who, actually, he's approved it, and he's encouraged people to listen to it, this baron. But it's not just about shady characters and bad things. It gives you... there are some horrible things that happen in it that he reports on. But there are also some slightly more, I don't know, human... Because it really humanizes certain elements of the industry. Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And he goes back at the end and he kind of puts these points, because he is, you know, John's a very moral figure. I think a lot of his stuff all the way through his career has been driven by, you know, what's the moral implications of these things. And he goes back and says, you know, you do realise this is happening. These people are ruining their lives. Mm. Porn stars now are unemployable between the ages of 20 and 30.
What?
So young, teenage girls, this is talking women here. Teenage girls obviously get lots of, you know, 18 God. To 20, 18 is the legal date, get loads of work. But then as soon as they're 20, they're considered too old. But then from 30 onwards, they can be in MILF videos.
Unbelievable.
How fabulous. I could be in the porn industry right now. Totally. What am I doing on this ruddy podcast?
Well, you know, if you disappear next week, yeah. We know where you are. You'll be in the valley in California. So yeah, that's the butterfly effect, John Ronson. So I quickly want to mention another podcast called Origins. Have you heard of Origins, John?
No.
Andrew Miller is the guy who did it, who's a writer, expert on TV comedy. He's written stuff about Saturday Night Live.
I do know this, actually. Sorry.
And it's all about Curb Your Enthusiasm. Origins will be, each series will look at a different thing and look at the origins of it, how it started, interview all the people involved.
Jeff.
And everyone involved in Curb is interviewed, and their interviews are woven in to the kind of 5-6 part story of it, starting at the beginning, Larry David's kind of pre-Curb career, and then all the way through to the current series, why there was a massive gap, 6-year gap between the last season and this series, and interviews everyone involved.
How much
Jeff
is Larry
Green,
involved?
Susie, Larry. Totally, all the way through. And then what's brilliant about it is, I mean, that he's brilliant at asking the right questions. So everything you want to know is addressed. And then he also makes all the individual interviews he's done available separately as a little kind of half-hour podcast.
That's
so you
smart.
Can just, it's really good. Yeah. So it's a fantastic, I think Curb fans have to listen to Origins.
Listen, I'm going to schedule that in for 10 years' time.
Yeah. It'll be perfect for you 10 years' time. There's probably do a West Wing one next, maybe, especially for you.
There is a West Wing podcast.
There is, actually.
Of course, there's a West Wing, yeah, of course.
Which is really good.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, I'm just going to quickly mention the new Morrissey album.
Oh, of course you are.
Fan, John?
Neutral.
Because we rarely do music, and I've made the next issue of Heat magazine that's out on today, Tuesday, the 14th of November. Of course, we should mention the Unmissables Awards podcast out today as well, the special that we've done. So not only in this issue do we get the Unmissable Awards, which, you know, I went out and met various people and gave them awards, and Kay thinks it's really fun. There's so many photos of me in the new issue of Heat giving awards to people.
It's as it should be. He's on every page.
I've also gratuitously reviewed the new Morrissey album. Morrissey is one of my musical heroes. And I've reviewed the new Arsenal-based film, 89.
How?
Yeah.
I didn't see these pages.
No, well...
done it when I've been away from my desk. Yeah. That's what's happened.
It's some of the most gratuitous reviewing of stuff ever in history of Heat magazine. Anyway, the new Morrissey album, which is the 11th.
It's not got the word Heat on the cover this week.
No, it's just Boyd.
Boyd's Heat. Special. It's his 11th solo album, Kay. And it is, I'm saying it's his best, possibly since Foxhall and I in the 90s.
Okay.
And it's got some absolute classics on it. And my favourites are, it's called Low in High School. The cover is very controversial. It's got this like kid.
Oh, God, yeah, I know about
Buckingham
Low in
Palace.
High School.
Yeah,
Steph and I were umming and ahhing about the title. I think it's a bit rubbish.
Well, yeah, I think it's good. The best songs are Jack is Only Happy When She's Up on the Stage, which is hilarious. The Girl from Tel Aviv, which is very interesting. And All Them Young People Must Fall in Love, which almost sounds like the Beatles. Yeah, very Beatlesy. Or Give Peace a Chance, the John Lennon song. And if you're a Morrissey fan, you'll love it. If you're a person who, when you mention Morrissey, gives you expression bordering on disgust that Kay's giving me right now.
Oh my God, this is just my
face. Which she hasn't had since. What's the love thing you really hated recently?
Kenneth Branagh's Poirot.
Oh no, yeah, Kenneth Branagh's Poirot. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty much the same expression you have on your face when you see the crease in his trousers.
I would say, listeners, I don't always pull these faces. Boyd's just. He's unaccustomed to my face.
Own the face bone. It's fine. I'm not. Okay. You have a very expressive. It's an expressive face.
Okay. Fine.
We know you can't hide, can she, John? She can't hide her.
Oh no, no.
Opinions.
Oh, actually, that is true.
Yeah. It's there.
Okay, fine.
You know, poker face. I mean, you don't play poker, do you?
No.
I mean,
I'm terrible.
You wouldn't
last. If I lie, you can
you
see my
would,
face.
Yeah, you wouldn't last.
I smile
a
all the time. Just basically ridiculous.
Anyway, it's out on Friday. The Morrissey album, by the way, Low in High School, on all formats. I sound like I'm promoting it. I don't know why I said that.
Because you are.
I am promoting it. Oh, please, God. Oh, obviously, I'm aware that he's politically dubious these days. I mean, you know, forget the whole UKIP thing. I don't know how I'm coming to terms with all that business, but who knows? Music's still good. That's the main thing.
Listen, before I give the shout out, why don't you say what this whole Unmissables Awards podcast is?
Well, this whole Unmissables podcast is a special podcast in which we reveal the winners of the Unmissables, the very prestigious Unmissables Awards, mm-hmm. which is the first time we've held
bigger
them.
Bigger than BAFTAs.
Bigger than the Oscars, where we've awarded every major category in popular culture and given the award, and in a lot of cases went out with the actual award and presented it to them. And you can hear the acceptance speeches and us discussing the winners in the special podcast.
Also, I sustained an injury during the recording of that podcast because I was doing drumming with my fingers like this.
Oh, yeah.
And then
for the drum
roll. Do it again. No.
Keep doing it. Yeah.
Then I had to go to the finger hospital. Yeah.
Also, a final point, if you haven't had your Steph fix for the day, she's on that one.
Yes,
so.
She is. Yeah, good that point. Is very true.
If you really need your
Stephans, we call them.
Steph fix, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
I want to give a shout out.
Oh, you
want to
give a shout out, yeah.
Yes, please, to the Super Pod. So these are our loyal listeners who've been asked to either review us on iTunes, which we love, or get in touch on Twitter. So Claire Phillips, at Claire Glitter, she was very nice to us on iTunes in her review, and she said our podcast was a highlight of her week and that she was saving it for a two-hour journey to work. How nice. I mean, I would say that seems to encourage us to make a two-hour podcast, which, you know, I'm very against.
Listen to it twice. It's about an hour.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But we're not going longer than an hour.
Listen to it twice, one of the other, yeah. Well, you can have this, and the Unmissables Awards podcast.
Oh, yeah, that would
today,
be.
Which is about, what, half an hour maybe?
Yeah.
35, yeah.
Hour and a half covered off. Also, Open Season at Neil Lark, fantastic surname, said he must have been listening to an old podcast, Unmissables podcast, because he said that he couldn't believe Boyd gave cheap, 4 stars, and he said Boyd had a shocker of a day. Right?
So Neil Lark is a regular, and he listens to my Arsenal one as well. So yeah, he's. I mean, I think he just wanted to find something to pick me up about. That's fine.
I defended you, and I said I also like cheap,
well,
cheap, cheap.
Yeah, obviously that's never going to be on TV ever again.
Oh, what do you think?
That's unlikely, I think. Yeah.
That's because they're bringing back Supermarket Sweep, the best supermarket-based game. Anyway, onto the meat.
Oh, was that it?
Yeah.
I thought you had some more shout-outs.
No, those are the two.
They were good shout-outs.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Onto the meat, indeed. The White Princess, okay, on the Drama Channel. Next Saturday at 9 o'clock. In fact, it opens with a double bill of episodes. And this is... it's adapted from the novel of the same name by Philippa Gregory. It's a sequel to The White Queen, which went out a few years ago. Go on.
Yeah, no, that was
which
really
watched,
good.
Yeah, it was a Sunday night drama on BBC One. And interestingly, John, so that was co-produced by BBC and Starz Channel in America. And the Starz Channel is a premium cable channel like HBO and Showtime and AMC, you know, the channels that show Game of Thrones and Breaking Bad and those things. So it's very much into sex and violence.
Starz with a Z,
as they say in the States. And I do believe that when this, The White Queen, the original of this, the first of the series of this, to which this is the sequel, was made, their episodes, their version, the ones that went out on Starz in America, were raunchier, had more nudity, sex and violence than the BBC One versions that went out on Sunday night in the cosy period drama slot on BBC One.
Boring.
How interesting is that? What, boring the BBC version or the story?
You've not been watching and listening to too much porn stuff.
Yeah. So BBC declined to get involved in this sequel, this 10-part
sequel.
It's
a no from us, said the BBC.
Right, said the BBC. So this is pure Starz, and the Drama Channel has acquired it from them and are showing it exclusively on Saturday nights. And basically, it's all about the post-War of the Roses period, where there was the former King Richard III was defeated at the Battle of Bosworth, and the victor Henry Tudor became Henry VII. He's played by Jacob Collins-Levy, handsome young man. Mm-hmm. And he gets married to Elizabeth Jodie Comer, who's, shall we say, reluctant, at the very least, to get involved with him.
Very reluctant.
She's the princess from the rival house, and she was Richard III's lover. So, controversially, she's not a virgin, Kay.
She's not the virgin queen.
Yeah, they get involved. And there's also her sister, Cecily of York, played by Suki Waterhouse. And she's kind of seems more into him than she is, and kind of like is flirts with him, to say the least, doesn't she, in this opening episode. And there's also the mother of Henry VII, the kind of parents who are really pompous. There's hidden children there's the boy who's kind of is the rightful York king, really, and he's in danger of his life. And it's a whole cornucopia of historical, regal drama treats, isn't it?
Yes.
Or is it? What did you think, Kay?
It's very raunchy, I think, still. It's a bit raunch, there's a bit of sex happening.
Well, yeah, this is BBC
One.
Stars,
yeah,
this is pure Starz, yeah.
I'm just confirming, it's true. right, disclaimer, I was a little bit tipsy when I watched this.
drunk viewing. Could be a new feature. Yeah. Like,
so I'd been to the hairdressers, had a glass or two.
What
about
the hairdressers?
Yeah. Hairdressers.
Yeah. This is a thing.
This is what happens.
This is a thing that happens. Yeah.
Are you glugging back the whiskey at the hairdresser?
I usually decline, but I was like, oh, go on then, I'll have a red. And a red and a half for me is like off my nut. It was in the evening. I wasn't like morning drinking.
Okay, right.
Because that would be, you know. Oh, hey, I'm not judging anyone, but I choose not to do that. Anyway, so I went home and watched this, and I don't know if that's why or just because it was just because it's good. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was much pacier than Gunpowder, which is what I was comparing it to, which we reviewed last episode or episode before. So at a better pace, faster. I mean, it was a scene setter, but just got on with it quicker. And I think I enjoyed it more because it focuses on the romantic lives, obviously, of Jodie Comer's character and the King. And so it felt a bit soapy, right? So it's all very, like, drama-filled. You know, she was a bit reluctant. There was a bit of a... There's a sex scene where, you know... I mean... I think the term angry sex could be used.
Definitely from her point of view, yeah.
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 And
she's not into it at all.
No, because also, I mean, he finishes early, shall we say? And his...
Quickly, definitely.
Yeah, and his excuse is, I was thinking of your sister.
Yeah, well...
I mean, how out of order is that? Yeah.
Well, I think the phrase, the sister is hot, does come to mind, doesn't it? And I don't want to be basic about it, but yeah. Suki Waterhouse as Cecily of York...
But Jodie Comer, like...
Oh, yeah, they're both.
Yeah.
She
has really bad luck, doesn't she? She plays the feisty Princess Elizabeth, but she has really bad luck in fictional husbands because she obviously played Kate in Dr. Foster, who was married to Simon,
yeah,
the bastard.
Of course, yeah. So she does have bad luck. She's very good at being furious.
Yeah.
She's furious a lot of the time, isn't she, John, in this?
She is livid.
Livid.
Livid Lizzie, as I called her.
Oh, very good. Now, you're a huge fan of period regal dramas, aren't you? You're known for it.
It's
my specialist subject, if I was on a mastermind.
Did you find the whole thing a tortuous test of your... No?
No, I didn't.
Good.
Why, pray tell?
I think Kay was hinting at it, but it is completely devoid of any subtlety. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I was thinking... we'll go into something in a bit that's much more... kind of subtle in its portrayal of characters, and I was thinking, this is black and white, this is good and evil, there's no the bad characters in this have absolutely no redeeming qualities.
Yeah,
Henry's just full-on terrible.
Yeah, bad man.
But I quite like a bit of black and white, especially after a glass and a half of wine.
Clearly, yeah. It's been described as, I think, like Game of Thrones, like feminist Game of Thrones, but, you know, based on real life.
It's a romp.
It is a romp, yeah. That's a good word for it, yeah.
And there's romping, so...
It is unashamed, isn't it? It's like, it's kind of like a... I mean, it's based... All of this, roughly, I think, happened. You know, I guess we don't know the extent to which...
At the end, there's a little asterisk, isn't there, that says, like, oh, some of the historical effects may have been changed for entertainment.
Yeah, which is fair enough. Yeah. But I agree, yeah. It's definitely like... It was definitely entertaining and fast moving. And I thought, actually... Because in the very first scene, there's, like, flashbacks to Elizabeth's previous sexual... activities. The very first, literally the first 10 seconds is like nudity, isn't it? There's like sex flashback.
It sets its stall.
Yeah, it sets its stall, exactly. And then there's some people murdered as well. So, but basically, if you'll know what you're getting in the first 2 minutes of this series. There's brutal murdering, sexy time, and then it's quite soapy action from the rest of it. And that's the whole tone of it. And I think it is, from that point of view, I think it works. It knows what it's doing. It works, doesn't it, really?
And there's not the violence of Gunpowder.
Not that level of violence quite. No.
No one's being hung, drawn and quartered.
No, although it's possible it could happen in the rest of the series. We haven't seen all 10 episodes, unless you did watch all 10 episodes.
No.
John, did you?
No, just the one for me.
Yeah.
There's a wonderfully awkward scene about halfway through where Henry asks them to dance.
The dancing
scene. That was
great.
Oh, God, so awkward.
Yeah.
Not performing monkeys. Yeah. Dance for me, girls.
Yeah, just for his pure... That's his future queen he asks to dance. Yeah, just for his pure entertainment and approval, yeah.
As Steph would say, he's a nasty bastard.
He is.
And I didn't realise there was someone else with a mandolin, so at first I thought he was just going to make them silently dance for 20 seconds.
It is brilliant.
I would... Just one thing as well. I thought the show was stolen by the warring mothers. I thought they're great. Mm. The two mother characters are really
matriarchs.
Brilliant.
Matriarchs.
Yes, Essie Davis plays Dowager Queen Elizabeth Woodville.
She the baddie one?
She's the pretty baddie one, yeah.
She is Henry's mother. Is
that
right?
Yes, and Lady Margaret Beaufort, played by Michelle Fairley, is the other mother, yeah. And it's a bit like Downton Abbey, isn't it, from that point of view? You can see Dame Maggie Smith, you know, kind of getting involved.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I think we all enjoyed it then.
Yeah.
Saying it's a veritable hit for Drama Channel.
It's a 4 for me. And I'm so happy to know about this channel now. I'm going to tune in more.
Yeah. I mean, they show loads of old whodunits and stuff, I believe. Yeah.
Including the P. Kinda I don't want to bring up the P word again, but is it on there?
Poirot, I don't know. No, Poirot's always on ITV3, oh, isn't two. It? It's like a staple. No, two is
Towie.
One, isn't it?
No, Towie's ITVB. Oh, my God. Okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to write a guide to the ITV
offshoot
channels.
Do a spider diagram or something. How are you going to keep up with these?
Two is Keith Lemon.
Two is Keith Lemon.
Right.
Three, B is Towie.
Yeah.
And your mate, your new mate.
Tamara Eccleston.
She's, her new series is on that. Three, I believe, or maybe even four. I don't know if there is a four still.
I don't know. What's
I think three. I'm saying three
Encore.
Is Midsummer Encore. Murders and Poirot. And there's Encore, yeah. Yeah. Encore is other stuff. Like I think that's what more Broadchurch.
I think we should start calling it Encore, which is what I called it.
Encore?
Yeah, Encore.
Oh, Encore. Yeah. Oh, your ankle. So how many stars, John, are you giving The White Princess?
I'll go with a 4, please.
I think it's a 4 for me as well.
Solid
We're in
four.
Agreement. Three full 4-star reviews. Let's move on, in sharp contrast, to the 11th series of BBC One's long-running, this is 11th series, celebrity comedy panel show, Would I Lie to You? Now, you may think this is a bit of a weird one. Why are we doing a comedy panel show? We usually do, you know, in-depth dramas and like the one we've just reviewed and excellent new sitcoms and stuff like that. It's rare that we've done a comedy panel show, isn't it? Maybe we did a League of Their Own.
I mean, I don't want to bring up the T word, which I was going to mention in my review of this.
Terminator.
Yes. How did you guess? No, Taskmaster.
Oh, Taskmaster. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we did do Taskmaster.
Lest we
forget. Did we do Les thing is terrible rhyming?
Len Goodman.
Rhyme time.
Yes.
Les Goodman, as I call it. Which I think is coming back soon, yeah.
Joy is it? Of they've recommissioned.
No, I think they stopped showing it halfway through.
Oh my God, that's terrible. And now they're kind of, they just pulled the plug.
Yeah, basically.
After Flatlining. Boyd's scathing review, they just thought.
Fair enough.
Anyway, would I lie to you?
No,
I wouldn't. Never. I'm putting my cards on the table. It is one of my favourite things on all of television. What do you think about that, John?
I think in a previous episode you said that people ask you what does a man who has to watch things for a living watch when he doesn't want to?
That's right.
When he wants to relax, and you said this show, so we had that insight already.
I think John deserves an award for listening to the podcast
and for using the word insight as well. So basically, I mean, what, is anyone? I mean, do we need to explain? Kay, you can explain.
Yeah, because what is not everyone knows.
No, exactly. There might be some people out there that have never watched an episode.
Yeah. So basically, Rob Brydon hosts, and there's two different teams, one led by Lee Mack and one by David Mitchell. And they have like two comedians per team and then one celebrity. In this case, it was Ed Balls and Kimberly Wyatt off the Pussycat Dolls. And they have to tell kind of stories about themselves.
And David Baddiel and Joe Brand. I hate to interrupt, but let's
give
the full guest lineup.
I mean, I said two comedians
just
per team.
Yeah.
And they tell stories about themselves, and some of them will be completely fact-based and some of them will be lies, big fat lies. And the other team has to guess which is which.
True.
And regardless, it's the first time they've seen the fact when they pull it out. So they don't have time to really come up with a backstory or anything.
No, exactly. Yeah, so there's three rounds. The opening round is where they haven't seen the story at all, and they have to, it might be true, and if it's not true, they have to make it up on the spot.
Yeah.
And then the middle round, which is my favourite, is where a person arrives, the mystery guest arrives.
Oh, I do love that, yeah.
Who is related somehow in a story to one of the three panellists on one team. And they all have to. The two of them are making up a story about how they know him or her, and one of them really does know him or her, and that's brilliant. And then the final round is the quickfire round, where again they just quickly go through an array of possibilities of whether they're telling the truth or they're lying. And of course, the great thing about it is you got Rob Brydon hosting it.
Oh, great.
Now Angus Deaton hosted it in the first two series. Remember that, John?
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. And Angus is fine. Angus is great, you know, but Rob Brydon does it brilliantly. He's so likeable. He's excellent, clever. And he's in A League of His Own. You've got Lee Mack and David Mitchell as the kind of class. You've got Lee Mack, you know, doing this kind of like, I'm a normal northern bloke routine. And David Mitchell doing, I'm a posh, kind of nerdy, geeky dude. So you've got that kind of class conflict going on with them, which has been running throughout all 11 series, pretty much. And then you've got the guests thrown in. And the whole concept of it, I think, is an endless joy. But am I overplaying it, John? Do you think I'm deluded and insane for
Ridiculous.
Liking this programme so much?
No. is the short answer.
Thanks.
So next show. I really like it. I think it's brilliant. I think it's the ultimate kind of dip in TV. It's the ultimate kind of, oh, that's on, I'll definitely watch that. I think it's Friday evenings, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they're moving to Monday evenings in the series. It's always been Friday evening. Good point. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, yeah. They've moved it to Monday at 8:30.
I think it's better suited to Friday.
I know,
it?
I don't know why they're doing
when
that.
But you come in and you're just like, oh.
Yeah, I know, it's controversial.
The format has changed absolutely zero in those 11 seasons, I believe.
I think in the first, well, I hate to contradict you.
No, please
you know,
do.
But they used to have some more, one. They used to have a round where they would show like a VT of something. And they'd say, and it wouldn't be particularly connected to anyone in the studio, and you'd have to guess whether it was true or false. So they did have that round.
I think it's got a whiff of Len Goodman about that.
Yeah, but they got rid of that because it didn't really work. Yeah, but you're right. For about, I would say, 9 series, it's been the same.
And I think it's definitely a case of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think the point you made about the interplay between the three, so you've got kind of the warmth of Rob Brydon, and then you've got the clash of, I think for me personally, and I'd imagine everyone who watches it enjoys a different element more, but the thing that I just find so funny is David Mitchell being mean to Lee Mack when he's talking out of his backside. Yeah. I just really, that for me, that's
so
the
good.
Funniest.
Yeah.
My one slight issue, Boyd.
It's a really
pernickety format issue.
Do
is
it.
The third round is the first round.
Yes.
They call it quickfire lies, but then they take forever to talk.
John, let me say now, you are absolutely correct. In fact, one of the great things about the completely untrue title of the final round, quickfire lies, is that often it's just one and it goes on for ages. Yeah. I remember one time Lee Mack had to do that thing about where he visited all of the pubs in England that began with a certain letter or something, and they had a whole map of it, and it went on and on and on for about 10 minutes. And it's hilarious. It's one of the funniest things that's ever happened on the show. But the idea that's quickfire round is ludicrous.
Lie.
It's preposterous, you're right. It's basically they repeat the first round all over again. Kay, what's your feeling about Would I Lie to You? Wiltie.
I really liked it. I liked it because, and I'm comparing this to Taskmaster, which is probably unfair, but
I think it's fair. They're both comedy.
You know, in Taskmaster, they had the ridiculous kind of slapstick physical element to this. I like that. That isn't the case with Would I Lie to You. Just based purely on their humor, their sense of humor, them being witty and clever, and it's none of that rubbish that Taskmaster had. So I really enjoyed that. But also, you got to learn interesting facts about celebrities, like and getting to see them doing stupid things, like.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, maybe I won't say it then.
Well, I'm just about to, I'm just checking whether
like
you're going to spoil
Eccles
it or not.
Singing.
Right. I'm not sure. Yeah. No, that's fine. I think, yeah.
I liked seeing how flexible Kimberly Wyatt was.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
No spoilers there.
Yeah. No, one of the incredible treats of this episode is you do get to see Ed Balls effectively doing karaoke.
Yeah.
Which is extraordinary. I mean, you wouldn't. That is unprecedented.
Yeah.
In the history of the show.
He's so game for love,
I know. Yeah. But the kind of the renaissance of Balls, the Balls-aissance.
Strictly Factor, that was.
Strictly, of course, started with Strictly and carrying on. He did a lot of The Last Leg. He was hilarious on The Last Leg and stuff like that. He's incredible to see, isn't it? This formerly, you know, obviously uptight politician. Now this freewheeling, giddy goat, playing the giddy goat.
Question.
Go ahead.
Did this used to be a radio show?
No.
Oh, I feel like it has the format. That would be so great on radio.
Yeah, no, you'd think. I'm pretty sure it wasn't. Yeah, I think it's straight to television. I think it was straight to television. I mean, I
listen,
stand
you're
correcting if I'm wrong.
Boy, you're a super
apologia
fan.
In advance.
So if you say it isn't, then it isn't.
I'm pretty sure.
Don't even Google it.
I'm Googling it.
We've used Boogle, Boyd Google.
Yeah, I think it's John's going to Googling it while I hold forth a little bit more about my love for Would I Lie to You in case it hasn't hit home fully.
Do you want to know how many stars I give it?
No, because I'm about to say something else about it now.
Oh, okay, fine.
I know you want to move on to stars, Kay, but, you know. I would say this episode is brilliant because the guests are great. David Baddiel is fantastic. Ed Balls, as we said. Joe Brand, who's been on it quite a lot and is always fantastic value on all of these shows, should not be misunderestimated. What's your open mouth for?
Oh, I thought David Baddiel was always on it. I thought Oh, I didn't realise he was also a guest. I thought it was just
that's
Kimberly
why you didn't
and Ed.
That's why I'm saying you didn't name them at the beginning. No.
Oh, yeah, that's why I didn't bother, because I was like, they're regulars.
No, the only regulars are host Rob Brydon, Lee Mack and David Mitchell. All the others
are
guests.
So they always have two comedians on as well.
No, that could be anyone. Any people from any walk of life.
Because that's what I liked about it, that they had two comedians per team rather than just celebrities who might make it less fun.
No, you've invented your own regular panellists. Yeah, they're not at all.
To write a letter.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure David would love to be on every week, but he's not. He's only on this. But they have good. They have really good array of guests. That's the other thing about the show. They're very good at guest booking. It's just everything about it. I think it's just. I can sit there watching hour after hour of Would I Lie to You, and I have got about 25 hours of it stocked up on my Sky Q. FYI.
Do you think you'd be good on the show? Because I think I'd be. I would be terrible because I just smile when I lie.
Yeah, you would be terrible. We've established that. You have the woman with no poker face is the title of your autobiography.
But you. But in a jokey way, you do like to lie as well.
No, I never lie.
Yeah, like in a jokey way.
Okay, maybe you'd never say you enjoy winding me up by lying.
Oh, I tease you constantly because you're so easy to wind up, but I never lie.
You are, yeah, you're wind. She is what Steve Wright would call a wind-up merchant. But I think not a kind of veritable liar.
In a lovable way, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
She's joshing. Yeah. You'd be a good interrogator on Would I Lie to You. You'd be good at eking out the truth from, I think. Yeah.
I love
possibly
asking
guessing.
Questions.
Yeah, asking questions, doing all that. But yeah, you wouldn't do the lying bit, no. Anyway, Would I Lie to You, series 11, as brilliant as ever, and pretty much the greatest show ever in the history of television, as far as I'm concerned. I'm giving it 5 stars. K.
4.5.
5 from
John.
Me.
Excellent. Good work, everyone.
Hurrah.
New series. Yes, controversially, moving to Monday. From next Monday, the 20th of November, BBC One, 8:30 p.m. Finally, in the real meat. I mean, we've had a romp of a period drama. We've had the giddiness of a comedy panel show. Now we've got a full-on 2.25-hour intense period drama film showing on the Netflix from Friday called Mudbound. John, how do you feel about kind of describing what this film is?
So as you said, it's an intense period drama and it follows the story of multiple people based around this farm. In particular, you have the owner of the farm, you have one of the families who work on the farm, and the thing that kind of links the two families together is the fact that they have relatively young men who have come back from the Second World War. And drama ensues.
Correct, it does. And now this is, we should say, it's adapted from a best-selling novel by a woman called Hilary Jordan, which came out a few years ago and was best-selling in America particularly. It's directed by and co-written by Dee Reese, who is that very rare thing. I'm making this clear right now. She's a female director. That's quite rare. She's a black female director. It's even more rare. And she co-wrote the script. And Netflix is definitely gearing it up for Oscar season. So I think they've, you know, it's no accident that it's arriving on Friday right in the middle of as all the Oscar films arrive in cinemas. You can go and see it, I believe, at Curzon Cinemas as well. Because it does look, it looks beautiful, I would say. You know, kind of the landscapes are used brilliantly and the muddy, that starts with this kind of very intense scene in the mud, doesn't it, where the son,
which is actually a flashback.
I would say it starts off being quite confusing, doesn't it? In the sense that not only does it start with it flashes forward. If it starts at the end of the story, kind of with this intense scene in the mud, where one guy is forcing the other guy to dig among the mud, and then it flashes back for the rest of the film. But you also get the internal thoughts of kind of 6 characters, I believe.
Multiple narrators,
which comes from the novel. Apparently, the novel is told from the point of view of the 6 characters, and it flits between all those different characters' internal monologues. And the film uses some of that, not all the way through, but quite a lot of it. Certainly, the beginning, you hear what they're thinking. Mm. And so you get to meet hear what the father of the black family that's living on the farm thinks, what the leader of the white family with his dad, who's a hideous racist,
horrendous man,
who then marries Kerry Mulligan's character, and she's quite reluctant. She's from the city, she has to move to the country, and she's quite reluctant. And then his more handsome, hotter brother, the one who goes off to the war, and the oldest son of the black family, he goes to war as well. And kind of it's interesting because the whole idea of it is this friendship forms between these two characters that have gone to war, but that almost doesn't happen until halfway through the film. The film takes about at least an hour, I was timing it, to bring them back from the war, because it's described in a lot of the in the summaries of this film as a post-war set, and post-war, but actually half of it takes place during the war while they're away.
The first half is kind of like farm life,
yeah,
and struggling to cope with the rains, which is flooding the cotton fields, and the relationship between the black family and the white family in trying to survive, basically.
Right. And establishing those characters, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, but you get snippets of the war. So, you know, suddenly you'll be in the farm, and then suddenly they're up in the plains and stuff like that. But actually, for me, when I really got into it, when Boyd said we had to watch this, because I was watching it very last minute, I was like, 2 hours and 15 minutes, you're having a laugh. And the first hour, I was like, oh, it just, I don't know. I wasn't as into it. Second half, when the two boys come back from war, the unlikely friendship is forming. And they're both kind of struggling to handle what they've seen during the war and also life back on the farm.
Yeah.
Particularly the young black guy, and it's really horrendous because obviously he's, you know, been brave enough to, I mean, he's gone to war, he's fought for his country, and then he comes back and these hideous racists are just awful to him. And there's one particular scene where he's in this shop and the father character, I don't know what his name is actually, but hideous racist, that's his name.
Yeah.
Hideous old bigot, insists that he cannot leave through the front of the shop as he's going to, he should go through the back because obviously it's in the South. And, you know, racism prevails. But
well, it was set in this period in the South, so this is...
Mississippi, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is when the Jim Crow laws, as they were called, so there was segregation in the South. So slavery had been abolished, but they still had racist laws whereby black people couldn't had to leave, use a different door to... And
couldn't travel in cars to...
Exactly, couldn't travel in cars together with a white person and couldn't, you know, had to sit at the back of the bus and all of that, yeah. And it really dramatises that, the reality of that incredible situation, isn't it?
Yeah,
but I agree with you. So I mentioned how the two guys don't arrive back from the war to halfway through, because I similarly I felt the first half was quite sprawling, kind of quite a big book and hard to kind of establish all the characters and the story. But when they both come back and this friendship forms between this white war hero and a black war hero, and they've both had similar experiences and they're both suffering in their different ways from post-traumatic stress, it really became compelling and gripping from then on. How did you have that experience, or were you compelled and gripped from the start?
I can see where you guys are coming from with the fact that it really does kick into gear after an hour, which for some people, particularly, you know, with Netflix, if it's on Netflix, you know, that's asking quite a lot of someone who's just sat down in front of a telly and thought, I'll give this a go. To ask them to stay for an hour is quite a lot to ask of them. But I think it does help inform the second half of the film, the fact that you have the first half of the film. And as you were saying, all these perspective shifts, at first it can be a bit confusing, but I really liked that. And I thought that it made every single, with exception of the aforementioned racist father, it makes every single character really, like, you understand their motives completely. True. And you understand everyone's really frustrated in this film.
Yeah.
So you've got the main guy who's frustrated that the farm life isn't what he dreamt up. You've got the wife who's been dragged along to this farm life. You've got the black family who are frustrated because of obvious reasons. So other films might have not given you that, and then you'd be like, oh, why are they complaining? Why are they being like that? I thought because you had everything laid out so clearly. And I did find it interesting that you mentioned the stuff that they're in the war, but it spends less than a few minutes in the... Every time you're in war, it's so quick. And then you go back to the farm and it's very slow. And that must have been a conscious decision to...
Show the... Like, it's different paces, right? So it's like the war was so frenetic and like... But these quick scenes in the air, and then
There are key moments, aren't there? So there's one, I'm just thinking with how much of a spoiler this is. There's a violent incident in the war for one of the characters that's pretty hideous, that's very brought home, very, you know, the violence of that moment and how he must end up leading to the stress afterwards, is intercut with an accident back home, isn't it, with and in the farmhouse, that's really grim as well. And you think they're both suffering these hideous events at the same time, roughly, and that so it kind of, and then one of the characters has a kind of romance during the war, and that you're seen briefly. So it feels like key moments, key incidents from the guys that are away at the war, intercut with kind of everyday, establishing the everyday misery. We're making it sound quite grim. I mean,
it's
grim, but it's so, I guess, it's a good, it's the quality, isn't it? It's one of those things where the quality of it, I think, the acting and the characterization and the script was so clever that even, and I was still compelled by the first hour. I was more that it all came together for me in the second hour, but I was never bored. I was definitely like fascinated all the way through. And we should say the cast is pretty amazing. Kerry Mulligan as that woman you said in who kind of reluctantly marries the other guy, Henry, and has to live on this farm, which is from the city, and she's not happy at all. There's Hap, who's the kind of black patriarch guy played by Rob Morgan, and Mary J. Blige plays his wife, who's completely
unrecognizable
and incredible. She is brilliant in it, I thought.
She's fantastic.
Incredible. And then you've got the sons, who are played by Jamie Garrett Hedlund, who's the brother, of Kerry Mulligan's husband, and
the handsome one.
Jason Mitchell as the black guy who comes back from the war, who, when he's in the war, Ron Sawyer, who is a hero, is a war hero, And people can acknowledge that. And then he comes back and he has to live in these among these Jim Crow laws and is treated horrendously and horrendously. Mm. And it does build up, doesn't it, to fairly awful thing that happens at the end. To which I was sat next to Kay while she was watching it, and she had to like fling her headphones off and barely. I don't know if she did. You actually watch it in the end, or
I watched as much as I can endure. It was quite sickening.
There's an ending end. That
yeah, yeah, not
that
the ending
needs to
end.
Be discussed, but right. No, we can't discuss it here.
No,
it's spoilery.
Yeah, no, the penultimate scene.
The last scene. You mean
off the record? I need to have a chat with you guys about the very final sequence in the film.
There's a very horrific, graphic scene, violent scene, and it's so sickeningly violent. It's not because I can't take, and I'm a scaredy cat, and I can't take violence.
Oh, no,
it's because it's because it's real, right?
Yeah,
this stuff happened, and it's just so awful and hideous that it happened. But in a weird way, it is also beautiful because what comes of that moment is, an even deeper, beautiful friendship between the two of the characters. So it was, but for me, it was a tough watch.
Yeah, I mean, it is a tough watch. I think that's safe to say. Yeah, I wonder. Do you think it's Oscar worthy? Do you think it's kind of being geared up that way? What's your feeling?
I would say so.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you two about this. Do you think that this kind of simultaneous release on Netflix would hamper a good film from getting consideration for these big awards and stuff?
Well, I think it's a big issue, isn't it? Yeah, it's less and less, I think, as time goes on. I mean, interesting, because we did Okja, we reviewed, which was shown at Cannes, and there was a big controversy about the fact that the snooty Cannes critics were annoyed that this film that wasn't really being shown in cinemas, hardly at all, and was on television, shouldn't be eligible for the Cannes Palme d'Or. And now you've got the situation where already we've had Netflix films nominated for Oscars, and they do, so they have to be in cinema. They can literally be in cinemas for a week in like one or two cinemas, I think, or maybe 10.
Could
rules.
It be in a home cinema of a very rich person?
No, it has to be in a public cinema. And like this is being eligible by being shown in Curzon cinemas. But it is an interesting topic. I kind of feel that it might hamper its chances a bit, just because the Academy is quite old still and traditional, and I wonder whether they frown on it a bit. But then if it's going to be this good, and I do think this is, I was trying to think, if I watched this just in the cinema and it wasn't anything to do with Netflix, I think it'd definitely be an obvious Oscars contender, because it's heavyweight subject matter done very, very well. And I think she's done it brilliantly. Dee Rees, the writer, co-writer and director, has done a brilliant job of kind of dramatising what must have been a very complicated novel with six different points of view, and she does it brilliantly, I think. So I think it should be considered. Kay,
I think it should be. I don't know if it'll necessarily win, but I think it definitely should be considered. It's an important film that people should see.
A couple of the acting categories, I think.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about the acting is because those six characters dealt fairly and evenly, aren't they? Like I was thinking, because she's the most famous, like Carey Mulligan, she'll be nominated, but I don't know if they're going to put them in for Best Actor or Best Supporting Actor. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Do you know who I think should? I think Ronsell.
Yeah.
Jason Mitchell.
Definitely.
Jason Mitchell is great.
Definitely. And also, who's the handsome brother?
Garrett Hedlund.
Hedlund. Yeah.
Those two.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And Mary J. Blige. She's fantastic.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard people discuss the idea of should there be some sort of
ensemble
cast. Right, they should, like the SAG Awards has an ensemble award.
Yeah.
Yeah, Screen Actors Guild Award, yeah.
So films like in previous years, Spotlight or
something. Yeah, absolutely, yeah, they should be, shouldn't they? Well, I think we're being fairly positive, aren't we, about Mudbound on the Netflix. Kay, how many stars are you giving it?
Do you know what, I wrote down my notes 4.5, but maybe I want to give it 5. No, I'm going to stick with my original, 4.5 stars.
I think I'm going to give it 4.5.
I'm going to give it
John.
A 5, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. So that is Mudbound, which is on Netflix from this Friday, the 17th of November. That concludes the meat of the podcast.
It's a good bit of meat this week, yeah.
But there's always one more thing.
Oh, yes.
Which is?
Question time!
Brilliant.
You know,
I
when
like
Steph's not
jingle.
Here,
yeah,
I do. I do the X Factor man
that's
voice,
great. Oh,
which
yeah,
John
that's
actually does. Bet John, do it. Go on.
No.
Go on. Just once.
It's a no from John.
Dance for me.
yeah. John, do the question time.
That's brilliant.
Furious.
In honor of two period drama adaptations. The White Princess is adapted from a novel, famous historical novel. Mudbound's adapted from a famous historical novel. So I'm asking, what is your favorite literary adaptation that's been turned into a film or TV show, John?
So when you posed this question to me, I panicked, and I knew Kay would have a good one.
Yeah.
Because Kay's a reader, So that's a good start.
Yeah.
Don't tell Steph.
And so then I was trying to go through, like I did last time where I tried to be smart about it and did the period drama I did.
You say
People
smart,
OJ.
I said.
No, that was very clever.
Broke the rules.
Yeah, so
thinking,
clever.
Do I do like a comic book or something?
Which you'd get turfed out of it.
Graphic novel.
Case threatening to throw you out.
But
this
eventually,
late stage.
Eventually I came across one where the book is brilliant and the film is brilliant and I think it is the correct answer, which is A Clockwork Orange.
That is a good answer.
And it's acceptable.
It's a very good answer, yeah. Stanley Kubrick, Kay?
Big fan.
Yep.
I think we both know I haven't seen it.
Fair enough. Well, it was for years and years, it was you couldn't watch it in this country because Stanley Kubrick removed it from circulation. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I mean, too young to know that.
No, I didn't. I knew the myth around it.
Yeah.
And then when you see it, you think it's...
Yeah, what's the problem? Yeah. It's like nothing. You get to see worse on Netflix every day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a brilliant film. Kay?
I'm going to go for a classic. The BBC adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, which I watched many, many years ago, bought it on VHS because I was so obsessed with it. Not just the Colin Firth, I know everyone talks about that scene, but I just thought...
What scene? I'm joking, sorry, carry on.
Don't be facetious, Boyd. I really loved it. Yeah. And I loved Jennifer... How do you say her surname? Jennifer Ely?
Ely, I think,
yeah,
yes.
I thought she was one of the best Elizabeth Bennets.
Yeah.
That's been portrayed.
Very good.
She is my Poirot.
That drama channel showed that, I believe. I think they've got the rights to that. I think they show it fairly regularly. I believe I'm right. And apologies again in advance if I've got that wrong. But
no,
I'm pretty sure it's a
staple.
You want to
watch it even more.
Yeah, I think they've shown it all in one go. Like, you can binge on it.
Didn't they do as a big stunt? They put a massive Colin Firth in a lake.
Yeah, I think they did,
to promote the fact.
What, like a lookalike-y?
No, like a big statue of him.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, yeah. I think that happened. They do these things.
Oh, I love that book so much.
I'm going for, you're probably asking, what are you going for?
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah, Boyd.
No, it's fine.
Come on, show me.
What are you going to go for, Boyd?
Thanks, guys. I am going for one of my favourite films, one of my favourite books, in a similar way to you, both brilliant.
Catcher in the Rye.
No, Catcher in the Rye hasn't been made into a film. Okay.
I thought it was one of your favourite books, I thought.
Yeah, but it has to be made.
That's
the rule. That's the question.
What was your favourite book?
I think it was made into a film in like 1957
or
something,
which
is apparently terrible.
Which I knew about, obviously.
No. Good guess. Well, I say good guess.
A guess.
John le Carré's Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, the recent Gary Oldman version. Gary Oldman, phenomenal in it.
Mm.
And it's just, I mean, the original TV series is one of the greatest TV series of all time.
Haven't read it. Is it worth reading?
Oh, you've got to read it. And it's have you seen this film, John?
I haven't. It's terrible.
I'm excited for you that you get to see it. Thomas Alfredson directed it. He is Swedish. And he did Let the Right One In. Have you seen Let the Right One In, about the teenage vampire?
I saw part of it. I got scared.
Okay. That's a masterpiece. And he directs Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy absolutely brilliantly. John Hurt is in it. The cast is incredible. It looks amazing. Its depiction of 70s kind of London spy circles and government circles is stunning. And it's one of my favourite films. Yeah. There you go.
Two acceptable answers.
Thanks.
Three, including yours.
Yeah.
Oh, you're judging
Alan.
No,
last time you didn't. You both broke the rules.
So. Did we?
Yeah, you did. You were like led astray by John.
You did a comment anyway. Let's not get into that.
It's fine. Oh, Boyd, why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with us? And more importantly, oh,
why don't you?
Okay. At Boyd Hilton. John,
thanks.
What's your handle?
At John C. N. Harris.
Oh, it's a bit complex. Yeah. Or at Kay Ribeiro.
He doesn't want me to get in touch with him.
And also, more importantly, now I'm on a real drive. I know no one really cares about this other than me, but I'm hoping our dear pogs out there do. We want to get reviewed more on iTunes, and I'm determined for us to get the magical 50 reviews before Christmas, which in the big scheme of things isn't a lot compared to maybe our brother podcast, sister podcast, Empire. But for us, that's a big deal, and we really would, you know, love it if you did that. So if you could go to iTunes, and I know it's like, usually I wouldn't be asked either, but here's a direct plea from me to you. We want to get 50 by Christmas.
You're going to read out all of the people who do review it?
That's, yeah, of course. This is what I'm doing every single time.
Okay, good.
Thanking them individually.
I'm just checking. Every single one. Yeah,
I wouldn't make that contract with the audience in case suddenly like hundreds of
people. No, I'm prepared to do that.
We'll do a whole episode.
We'll do a special episode where in which Kay reads out the names of the hundreds of people.
I'll be happy to do that and I'll do
Yeah, and she breaks her fingers.
And I'll go back to finger hospital.
Breaks her fingers with that thing. Thank you ever so much. It's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
Bye from me.